ugly. Before you can work with your thoughts, you need to get to know them. What are they actually about? The following exercise can help you find out. Observing your thoughts. Sit down at the table with a couple of people. One person asks the questions, the others do the thinking. The interviewer asks a few questions, either the sample questions or ones he or she has made up. And the thinkers hear the conveyor belt of thoughts producing immediate answers in their heads. What thoughts pass by? Are they accompanied by images? You can take 5 seconds for each question. What is your favorite food? What makes you really happy? What do you worry about? When you give your thoughts free rein, what are they about? Take 20 seconds this time. Thoughts are always busy, but you can choose whether to engage with them or just observe them briefly before letting them go again. It's up to you whether you believe them or simply recognize them with a smile, as old friends with the habit of dropping by uninvited and telling tall tales. Once the process of observing your thoughts is giving you a sense of how those thoughts are trying to steer you toward the kitchen cupboard where the potato chips are kept as soon as you think of potato chips, or toward gloominess the minute you think about the math homework you just cannot do, you begin to get a much better insight into your thinking mind. What do you worry about? We all worry from time to time. At such moments, our mind takes us to places where doubt, fear, and lack of confidence are lurking. Sometimes your thoughts just keep on churning and keep you awake at night. But what are they about? In order to identify the worrying thoughts, you can do the following exercise with your child and ask her or him which of the thoughts on this list make occasional or frequent appearances. Kids can jot down the corresponding thoughts in a notebook. This creates an insight into fixed patterns of thought and our habitual reactions to them. Ask the child to complete the following thoughts, beginning with, I sometimes worry about being bullied. Then I think not being good enough at things. Then I think having had an argument. Then I think someone being really mad at me. Then I think wanting to hurt others because they hurt me. Then I think whether people like me. Then I think people and animals dying. Then I think something else. Then I think it may be good to talk about the conveyor belt of worries before doing exercise 8 at the end of this audiobook. Bedtime is a good time for this exercise. The head often fills with thoughts as soon as the body starts relaxing and there are no more obligations or distractions. First aid for worries. This exercise teaches children to shift their attention out of their head and to distance themselves from their thoughts. They can lower their attention like a small spider on a thread. Lower it farther and farther, all the way down into the abdomen. There are no thoughts inside the abdomen, only the breath, the calm movement of the breath. Deep down in the abdomen, all is calm. There are no worries. There are no fights. There is peace and intense quiet. Whenever your child is worrying, he or she need do only two things. One, notice that he or she is worrying. Two, move out of the head and down toward the breath in the abdomen. There are no thoughts inside the abdomen. How to do this at home. Here are some more strategies for calming worries. The little box of worries. For children who have difficulties doing the first aid for worries exercise and would rather do something with their hands, a nicely decorated and perhaps homemade box of worries can do the trick. Before your child turns in for the night, you can ask the child if he or she is upset about anything. Are there any worries? Things the child is getting worked up about? Thinking about these worries, instead of not thinking about them, will reveal what they are all about. These thoughts can then be put into the box. The lid comes off, the worries go in, and the lid goes back on. Your child can then look at the little box of worries somewhere on a shelf in the room, from a distance, so the child can see they are no longer in his or her head. Chapter 9. It is good to be kind. Kindness is one of the most powerful qualities a person can possess. It is like a gentle rain that falls everywhere, without excluding a single place. It just falls without distinction. Kindness is non-judgmental and inclusive, that is, if it is genuine. Kindness touches your heart, enabling you to grow and learn to trust yourself and others. Kindness toward yourself and others comforts, heals, and helps you to be more balanced and open, even when things are difficult or distressing. Here's an interesting story about the healing power of kindness. At a large university hospital pediatrics department, with three specialist subwards, the young patients in one ward were responding much better to treatment than those in the others. Nobody knew why. Their clinical pictures were identical, as were their ages. Their medication was similar, too. The doctors did research but remained mystified. The difference, it turned out, is explained by human kindness. On the one ward, a Surinamese cleaning woman went around mopping the floors every day. As she passed the children's beds, she sang Surinamese lullabies, took the time to listen to stories and questions, and lovingly ruffled the young patient's hair. Her warmth, joy, and unconditional love helped the kids there recover faster than on the other wards. Most often, children are close to their kind nature. Trusting and a bit dreamy or restless, they take each day as it comes, happy with the way things are. But there are exceptions. For example, an 8-year-old boy named Sander came to see me in my practice with symptoms of anxiety and insomnia. His parents told me that he was being bullied at school. Not very openly, but in an underhanded and undermining way. It all started with a deflated bicycle tire. No one knew who was responsible. Then Sander's coat got moved so that he could no longer find it. Again, the culprit was nowhere to be found. And then small groups of boys surrounded him after school, mocking him and calling him names. Sander was afraid to go home by himself. He was feeling helpless, vulnerable, and alone. He kept thinking it was his own fault, which only added to the insecurity. Fortunately, Sander confided in his parents. They sought help when their son had trouble sleeping at night and taught him to stand up for himself and take charge of the situation. This may not have reduced the bullying immediately, but it helped him feel like less of a victim. He started taking judo lessons, and while remaining the friendly guy he always was, he now responds more assertively when the other boys start threatening him. Is it worth fighting back? Would hitting back or bullying and name-calling in return be a more effective approach? Some think so, but I disagree. Ultimately, physical and verbal abuse will only provoke more aggression, more antagonism, and further trouble. But what you can do is show that you are not weak or a pushover. As we saw in Sanders' story, there are other ways of dealing with a sense of intimidation. There is no need to walk away or start fighting, but you can still make it clear, either verbally or physically, that you will not be pushed around. Once upon a time, somewhere on this earth, there was a snake who was fed up with people screaming and running away from him. He went into the forest and asked a wise old man who lived there what he could do to make people fear him less. The sage gave it some thought and said,
"You could try not to hiss or show your venomous fangs and pretend to be completely harmless."
The snake decided to give it a try, but the strategy backfired. As soon as the villagers realized that they were no longer in danger, they started pelting the poor creature with large rocks. The snake narrowly escaped with his life and writhed back to the wise old man. "Now what?" The man sent the snake back, telling him to show his mighty fangs and flex his muscles, but not to squirt venom and injure people. This time around, the villagers kept a respectful distance, sensing the snake's might as it slowly slithered into the village. Nothing happened, but everybody knew it was a distinct possibility. Kindness is a skill. While practicing kindness during the Eileen Snell Method lessons in school, the children learned to reflect on people who are particularly considerate and nice to them, to recognize what love feels like. Many mothers and fathers, stepmothers and stepfathers, grandpas and grandmas got a mention during the exercise. Next up, the kids learned that they can send the same stream of warm, loving feelings to others, even to a parent or a grandparent who is no longer alive. You can send friendly thoughts and wish others to be happy wherever they are, at any time, whenever you feel like it. You can even send them to yourself. Practicing kindness enables children to recalibrate their heart's compass. The final lessons of the Eileen Snell Method are about compassion. A tough little preschool child with spiky hair and a mischievous look in his eyes expressed his surprise after doing the compassion exercise.
"I noticed that lots of people love me, but," and he jabbed a finger at his chest, "I don't think I'm very nice. I can be really naughty."
Suddenly he looked extremely small and vulnerable. Kids learn that being unkind every now and then is not the end of the world. We all get moody or say harsh things from time to time. But being aware that you are unkind, when you are, sheds some light on your own behavior and gives you more freedom of action. It brings each child a step closer to compassion, to a better world of his or her own making. It is good to be kind, for everyone, kids included. In another lesson, there were 28 pre-adolescents practicing kindness in a school sports hall. Not a single child thought it was strange. Dead serious, they stood in a big circle around a beautiful, soft, compliment ball. The first kid picked up the ball, called out the name of a classmate, and said, while throwing the ball to him,
"I think it's amazing that after a fight, you're always the first one to try and make it up again."
"Thanks," the recipient said and reflected a moment, before throwing the ball to a girl across from him and saying,
"I like you because you're always yourself. You're never silly or anything."
As she accepted the ball and the compliment, a shy smile broke through. She passed the ball on with the message,
"You're special because you're a real friend. You're such a good listener."
I was touched when I saw the ball going to a boy who is a bit of a bully and troublemaker in class. He was given the ball with the words, "I think you're so much nicer than last year." Following these exercises, the teachers noticed changes in the classroom. During a meeting, they expressed their surprise. "They're giving each other a lot more space. I often hear them saying it's cool and great when someone has done something he thought was difficult. The mood has really changed. They're helping each other, and there are fewer cliques." Listen to exercises 9, a little boost, and 10, the secret of the heart chamber. A little boost and the secret of the heart chamber will enhance awareness of and reflection on enjoyable moments. How to do this at home. We all like a compliment. It is priceless to hear someone tell you that you are good and that you are loved just the way you are. It is also nice to hear what the other person likes about you. It is the kind of thing you are likely to remember years later. Like precious jewels, sincere compliments and kind remarks are cherished and stored in the chamber of the heart. Noticing your unkindness. You and your family can make bracelets out of elastic bands. This bracelet is worn on your right wrist for weeks if need be, as a reminder to be nice to yourself and others. Whenever you think you are acting thoughtlessly, being unkind to yourself or genuinely unpleasant toward others, you move the bracelet to your other wrist. As soon as it happens again, you move the bracelet back. This makes you more aware of every act of unkindness. And instead of telling yourself off when it happens, you just move the bracelet to your other wrist with a smile on your face. Please note, others should not interfere in this process by pointing out your failures or unkindness. You do it for yourself. This exercise is not about telling you that you cannot be unkind. It is about noticing that you are unkind. And as soon as you notice, you have a choice. Do you stick with it? Or do you stop now that you know? Looking at the bigger picture. Look for someone close to you, at home or in school, who bothers you a lot. Someone you dislike or would rather avoid. Now spend the day secretly, without anyone else knowing, looking for tenderness, generosity, kindness, or any other positive trait in this person. He or she need not become your best friend, but it is good to see that someone is not just unkind. I like you because... The following exercise can be done with all family members who can write, including Grandpa and Grandma. The results can be kept forever. Kindness does not fade and love never falters. They keep touching your heart. Everybody is given a piece of paper with the names of all family members and relatives. Take your time to call to mind what you appreciate about the others. Then, after every name, you write one sweet, nice, or unforgettable thing about that person. Fold the paper and hand it to your mom or dad, who then keeps the notes. A few weeks later, he or she takes them all out again to compile lists of the compliments made about each person. One day, everybody will find his or her personal list under the pillow. It is heartwarming to read what you do not often hear. It is touching to realize how nice and sweet you really are, without having to make a special effort, just by being you. Precisely for being you. Chapter 10. Patience, Trust, and Letting Go. If only we had the patience of a caterpillar in a cocoon, waiting to transform into a butterfly. If only we had the trust of a newborn child. Or if only we could let go with the wisdom of a leaf in the fall. Our lives would surely be easier. There are so many things we wish were different. Better, safer, prettier, easier, or back to the way they used to be. Disappointment, sadness, wanting to be less lonely, or not seeing any light at the end of the tunnel, these are feelings that we all have from time to time. At such moments, desire kicks in, a deep-seated wish for things to be different from the way they are now. Wishes and desires are important. In fact, they are the first step toward a better world, a safer place, good health. Wishes and desires are healthy, but difficult too. They keep drawing attention to what you do not have, rather than what you do have. How do you handle them without becoming trapped by what you badly want but do not have? What is the desire really about? As a parent, you can be aware of an immense desire in your child, a desire for something to stop, being bullied, a row with a friend, an illness, those horrible pimples, getting fat, or for an achievement, a good exam result, a successful classroom presentation, more confidence. In many instances, these desires can be realized through action. Hard work, frequent practice, a better diet, doing difficult sums. But what about desires outside your field of influence? Such as recovering from a nasty illness, or your child's desire to spend more time on his or her birthday with the child's father who lives in a distant town. Some situations simply cannot be changed, not even with the best will in the world, because it is just the way things are. So is there absolutely nothing you can do about an extremely strong desire for a happy ending or a change in the situation? Luckily, there is. You can always change your attitude toward the situation, and visions can help you with this. Not nightmare visions, but dream visions. Your inner movie theater. We all have the ability to see pictures inside our heads with our eyes closed. Sometimes these are just some random, unconnected pictures. Sometimes they are entire movies, making you feel as if you were in an inner movie theater with someone else at the controls, switching the movies on and off again. You see a creepy guy climbing through your window in the dead of night, or you see yourself repeatedly failing an important exam. We are responsible for generating all of these images, often unconsciously and habitually. In and of themselves, these images have no value other than the one you attach to them. But if your mind can produce scary pictures, nightmare visions, can it also generate nice pictures, dream visions? Yes. By deliberately tapping into this particular skill of your mind, you can create beautiful and enjoyable pictures, just like a real film director. A 6-year-old girl receives a bike for her birthday. Much to her parents' surprise, she hops on and cycles off effortlessly. When asked how she learned to do this so quickly, she says, "I kept picturing how to do it. In my mind, I saw myself cycling." When Saskia, who is in 8th grade, gave a presentation, she did much better than on previous occasions. Shortly before the presentation, she had done the sitting still like a frog exercise, which helped her relax. And she spent the weeks leading up to the presentation picturing herself facing the class, relaxed, steady, and brimming with self-confidence. It took only 2 minutes a day. By deliberately mobilizing internal images, you can uncover hidden qualities. Such images are not meant to compensate for something, act like a magic wand, or achieve the impossible. They merely visualize something that is already in you and that you want to reinforce, improve, or rely on. Like an artist who can see the potential of a block of rough stone in her mind's eye, expresses her vision by steadily chipping away at the material. Picturing your heart's desire. When I ask children about their heart's desire, I get to hear poignant stories about great and frequently well-hidden desires. They often think about them in bed but rarely discuss them, convinced that the situation is hopeless anyway, or afraid to cause their already beleaguered parents further pain. "My mother tells me I must learn to live with the fact that I'm ill and won't get better, but I don't know how. I want my parents to talk to each other again. They're divorced and haven't spoken properly for almost a year. I don't want to be sick anymore. I just want to be like any other child. I really miss my granddad. I wish he wasn't dead." Even in the face of such seemingly unattainable desires, images can be effectively mobilized, not out of a wish to manipulate reality, but out of the wisdom and knowledge that sooner or later, things will change. Sometimes your attitude toward the situation changes. Sometimes it's the situation itself that changes. There is usually no way of knowing in advance. But a change will come. It always does. The following exercise can help. The Wishing Tree. A beautiful old visualization technique introduces children to the process of patience, trust, and letting go. It helps them visualize their desires, teaching them to have faith in change, and encouraging them to let go. To let go of the desire to control. To let go of things they cannot influence. Eventually they will realize that once they stop obsessing about it, a change is more likely to come. Sit up straight and comfortably. You can close or half-close your eyes. Sitting like this, you can tune into your breathing. Tuning into your breathing is always special. It brings you here, to where you are sitting right now, in this very spot. Hold your attention on your breath for a while. Take your time to feel the familiar movement of the breath. The breath goes in and out, in and out again. When you are ready, You can come along to a beautiful place in nature. Maybe it is a place you have visited before, or maybe it's an imagined place. Take your time to look around and see where you are. It is nice and quiet in this place. Safe and pleasant and with great views. What do you see? If you look into the distance, you will see an old tree. Why don't you walk over to it? It is a beautiful old tree, a very special tree. It is a wishing tree that has stood there for more than a century. The tree is large and solid. It has a beautiful thick trunk and wide branches with bright green leaves. Look closely and you will see white doves sitting on the branches of the tree. Some are close together. Others keep to themselves. There are quite a few. Each dove can fulfill one of your heart's desires. Not immediately, but when the time is ripe. And not just any wish, but wishes that come straight from the heart and are truly important to you. Now take your time to let a wish surface of its own accord, straight from the heart. There is no need to think. Just wait for something to come up. It can be a feeling or an idea, too. It can be something you have never talked to anyone about. What is coming up? As soon as you know, you call out softly without anyone else hearing for one of the doves. Let it sit on your hand, and then hold your hand close to your heart. Tell the dove your heart's deepest desire. It will understand. Give your wish to the dove and release the bird. Let it go. Watch the dove fly off, farther and farther away, on its way to fulfill your heart's desire. Not today or tomorrow, and maybe not next week either. But rest assured that things will change. Not always exactly the way you wanted it, maybe not quite as fast as you were hoping, but often even better than expected. One day you will notice a change, maybe when you have stopped thinking about it. Have faith. Have faith and let go of the wish and all the accompanying images. Calmly open your eyes again and remain seated for a while. It is important to discuss the wishing tree meditation with your child. Ask about the child's experiences and accept whatever he or she is prepared to say about them. An 11-year-old girl talks of missing her mother, who has passed away. During the wishing tree meditation, the girl expresses the strong desire to see her again. I ask her where she feels it when she thinks of her mother. The girl's face softens and she looks really sweet when she says, "I feel her in my heart." Can you see her when you think of her? A little bit, in a small halo of light. I tell her that she can direct her attention to her heart, to see her mother, every day, as often as she likes. Maybe she would like to do a drawing of her mother inside her heart. 3 weeks later, she proudly shows me the drawing. It hangs above her bed. The horrible feeling of loss has turned into something else. Acceptance. Every day, just before going to bed, she talks to her mother. And suddenly, she likes her father's new girlfriend a little bit more, too. A girl who was being bullied in school told her mother about the wishing tree. Her deepest wish was not to be bullied anymore. The mother had not known about the bullying, but now she sprang into action. She visited the school to discuss the matter. The school responded positively by setting up a meeting with the girl, the bully, and the homeroom teacher. The bullying did not happen again. That is how quickly a wish can come true. Patience, trust, and letting go play an important role in all desires, big and small. Patience, because there is a time for everything. Trust, because you know there will always be change. And finally, letting go, because you have to let go of the need to manipulate and control this process. Let go of the idea that things have to be done your way. This process of letting go of control, in particular, is never easy. But remember, letting go is not the same as giving up. We are inclined to think that surrendering control equals giving up our desire for change and putting up with the way things are. Nothing could be further from the truth. Acceptance in the sense of acknowledgement actually opens doors. It is liberating to understand that change does not necessarily stem from wanting something different, from manipulating, expecting, or even demanding change, but from knowing that something will be different, come what may. It gives you the freedom to choose how to deal with everything that happens in the lives of both you and your children, regardless of the force and height of the waves. Just as the little boy discovered in the following story. Once upon a time, there was a boy who longed to become a surfer. But he was only 10, lived too far from the sea, and had no money to buy a board. He still dreamed about it, though. Night and day. With his eyes closed, he could see himself surfing the waves. He could even feel it. He could smell the sea and feel the tension in his muscles. Concentrating really hard and continually shifting his balance, he imagined himself riding the waves. It was really exciting. He managed to pull it off more and more often. Now, this wave is mine. This very wave. Wow! This is it. This is great. But would he ever be able to surf for real? One day, he and his parents set off on vacation. They were going to the Côte Sauvage in Brittany, France. He had no idea where that was. But after a 10-hour drive, they arrived at their destination, feeling hot and tired. As soon as he got out of the car, he smelled the sea. Thrilled, he ran to the beach, and what he saw there in the evening light was amazing. Several boys were lying in a group in the water. Like young walruses, they were waiting for the right wave. As soon as a beautiful wave rose up, they quickly paddled over and leaped on their boards to catch the wave. One of the boys surfed toward the beach and yelled,
"You want to try? It's really cool. Have you done it before?"
The boy said timidly,
"No, never, but I'd love to try."
The surfer handed over his board. It was a nice white one, with a small blue dolphin on the bottom. The boy grabbed the board, determined to give it a go. He paddled through the powerful surf with some difficulty, as he had done so often in his imagination. At the sight of the first high wave, he stood up, planting his feet firmly on the board. He held his breath. Would he be okay? Yes, he was okay. He was doing great. This is what he had dreamed of.
This is what he used to see when he closed his eyes and thought of surfing. And now his dreams were coming true. Of course, he still had a lot to learn. It did not always come as easily as that first time. But because he really wanted to surf, he got better and better at it. This boy is now a well-known surfing instructor in Scheveningen on the Dutch coast, where he teaches hundreds of children. He teaches them trust and letting go, as well as surfing. Trust that the right moment will come along. This moment. Trust that the next wave will always come along, and to let go of the idea that the waves ought to be moving exactly the way we want them to. Surfing the waves of life gives you insight not only into your own nature, but also into the ever-changing natural world of which you are a part. Good luck with the exercises, and may they help you and your children to live even more mindful, relaxed, and confident lives.
Exercise number one, sitting still like a frog. This exercise teaches you to sit with the attention of a frog. Stopping whatever you're doing in order to focus and observe is the beginning of every mindfulness exercise. It helps you find out what you're thinking, feeling, and doing. Stopping and observing are things you can learn from a frog. A frog jumps, stops, and sits really still, while observing everything that's going on around him. When you sit like a frog, you only move when you really have to. When a frog is hungry, it moves to eat. And when it's startled, it moves a little, because it's startled. Sometimes it moves just a single eye, because a raindrop has dropped on it, or a single leg to shift its position. But it doesn't waste energy on doing things it doesn't have to do. The frog sits still, very still, and when it breathes, its frog belly rises a little and then falls again. It's alert and still. Attentive. A frog isn't easily distracted. It's aware of all the commotion around him, but it doesn't react. It sits still with mindful attention. It doesn't jump at every chance, although it's capable of enormous leaps. This way the frog doesn't get tired, doesn't do things for no reason, and doesn't get carried away by all kinds of mad ideas. It can stop jumping and be still. You too can learn to sit still like a frog. So now I'd like to ask you to sit down comfortably on a chair or on a cushion. Straighten your back so it's relaxed. And if you like, you can close your eyes or lower your eyelids as much as you're happy with. Take your time to sit up straight and relaxed. Your feet on the floor, your back straight, and your shoulders down. You can leave your hands in your lap. Now imagine you're a frog, somewhere on the edge of a large pond. Of course, you're not a real frog, but you've got something that a frog has too, the ability to sit still. And what you need to sit still is attention. Attention and calmness. The attention that stops you from jumping up and running away from what you're doing right now. And the calmness to stay seated. So take your time to focus your attention and sit still, just like a frog. Your arms and legs are still. Your bottom and your belly are still. Your back, your neck and your head are still. Your entire body is still and calm. Mindful and calm. Still and attentive. And when you're sitting here, all still and calm, you'll notice all kinds of things. Maybe you'll notice that some small part of your body is always moving. A finger, a leg, your eyelids, or something else, and that's fine. The point of this exercise is not that you're not allowed to move, but that you notice that some part of you is still moving. So what are you noticing right now? When you notice some small movements here and there, then maybe you also notice that with each breath, some part of your body also moves. Why don't you direct your attention to the tip of your nose? There, where the air goes into your nose and comes out again. What do you feel? Being aware that you're breathing is a special experience that can help you relax. Maybe you also feel the breath in your throat, in your chest, or perhaps even further down in your belly. You can put your hands on your belly and feel it move a little every time you breathe. It's kind of fun to be so tuned into your breathing. It tells you all kinds of things. It tells you whether your breathing is regular or irregular. You may also notice the brief pauses just after you breathe in and just after you breathe out. Maybe you can tune into this brief pause after each breath. You don't have to change the way you breathe. Just breathe normally. And notice how special those brief pauses are. After each breath in, and again after each breath out. And there's another special thing. If your breathing becomes a bit calmer and a bit deeper after a while, you'll notice that your body becomes a bit calmer too, and more relaxed perhaps. And your thoughts are calming down too. Breathing brings calm. So breathe in and breathe out again. Every time you breathe in, your belly rises a little. And every time you breathe out, it falls a little. Have a look. Direct your attention to it, to the gentle movement of the breath in your belly. It feels good to tune into your breathing. It feels good to calm down. And breathing doesn't require any special effort. Your body breathes all by itself. Observe the movement of your breath for a little while longer. It rises and it falls. It rises and it falls. And the air goes in and out again. Attention and breathing, they calm you right down at this moment. And again at this moment. Can you feel it? You can learn a lot from a frog. You can learn not to react to everything you think, hear, or see. You're aware of everything, but you don't react unless you really have to, on purpose rather than on impulse. Sitting still with the mindful attention of a frog, practice and you'll get better at remembering things. You'll notice a lot more. I wish you lots of moments of mindful attention today and lots of fun. Exercise number 2. The Little Frog. In this exercise, I'd like to teach you to sit still like a frog. All you need to do is find a place to sit with your back straight, your legs either crossed or stretched out, and your attention focused on yourself. Frogs can jump really far and croak really loud, but they can also sit very still and do nothing. Frogs also may find it difficult to sit still at first. Their arms want to move, their legs want to move. But the more you practice, the better you'll get. And then you'll enjoy doing nothing at all, except to sit still as a frog. If you like, you can close your eyes, or half close them. Just do whatever feels good to you. And now, just like the frog, you're sitting still as you possibly can. But to be still, you need attention. Attention and calmness. Your legs are still. Your arms are still. Your bottom is still. And even your head is still and calm. And while you're sitting here, maybe you notice that some part of you is always moving. Your eyes, maybe. Or a finger. Or maybe your bottom can't stop wiggling. And that's absolutely fine. It's not that you're not allowed to move, but that you notice that something is moving. And do you know what else is always moving? No matter how still you are? It's the breath. The breath in your belly. Why don't you put your hands on your belly and feel it move up and down a bit while you're breathing? You can feel your belly move up a bit and down a bit. Up a bit and down a bit. Can you feel it? Tuning into your breathing calms you down. And just like the frog, you're sitting still as you possibly can. See if you can stay tuned into the breath in your belly for a little while longer. That's it. You're doing great. Tuning into your breathing can be very helpful when you've fallen down, for example, or when you're really angry, when you're tired, or when you just want to relax a bit. Maybe you want to practice sitting still like a frog again tomorrow. Who knows? When you hear the bells in a moment, you can get up again and get on with your day. I hope you have lots of fun today. Exercise number 3. Attention to the breath. The best way to practice mindful attention is by focusing on the breath. Why? Because your breath is always with you. You can't forget it, or drop it, or leave it at home. Like a loyal friend, it's always with you. You can learn a lot from your breath. How you're feeling, for instance, or how calm or restless you are inside. In this exercise, you'll learn to direct your mindful attention to your breathing and to notice when you're lost in thought or distracted by sudden noises. As soon as you're aware of this, you can shift your attention back to your breathing again and again. That's how you train your attention muscle and the more you practice, the better and stronger it will become. Concentration requires practice. So, I'd like to ask you to stop everything you're doing right now and to sit still on a cushion or chair. Straighten your back so your body is both erect and relaxed. Take your time to sit up straight and comfortably. And then you can close your eyes. With your eyes closed, you'll be more aware of your breathing. And now I'd like to ask you to shift your attention away from the outside world and into your inner world, into your body, and to cast a curious eye over your breathing. What's happening to your breathing right now? What's it telling you? All you need to do is observe it, nothing else. Like a guard outside the castle gates who watches everybody going in and coming out again. The same with your breath. Your breath flows in and out again. How does it feel? You may notice air going in and coming out again by the tip of your nose. And what do you notice when you direct your attention there? To the tip of your nose. Perhaps you feel those currents of air going in and coming out again. Is the air cold or a bit warm? Does the air coming out feel the same as the air going in? Are you aware of the air going in through your nose and coming out again, again and again? And now that you're tuned into your breathing, I'd like to ask you to harness the attention of a frog and take a couple of deeper breaths. Without forcing anything, just draw a few deeper breaths. What happens when you draw a deeper breath in? And what happens when you breathe out more deeply? There's no need to force anything or do anything special. Just take a little more breath into your belly without straining. Allow more air to flow into your belly and slowly out again. Your breath is very calm, and it's slowing down, becoming deeper and more regular. Keep breathing deeply and regularly. How does it feel inside your body? Perhaps you're calming down too, just like your breathing. And once you're a bit calmer, you'll be able to concentrate better. Slowly and spontaneously, you're breathing. And slowly and spontaneously, your body relaxes. Your breathing is becoming very deep and regular. But sometimes the opposite happens, and you're aware of becoming restless. There are too many things on your mind, too many frustrations, and you realize you simply can't tune into your breathing. This will happen plenty of times, and it's okay. It's difficult to concentrate when you're worried about something. Your mind keeps wandering and your breathing changes. Maybe it becomes a bit shorter and shallower. Maybe you've noticed that when you start thinking about something difficult or frustrating, that your breathing becomes shorter and shallower. you're worrying or thinking about things you find horrible or scary, you may notice